I will show you how to use this this algorithm to simulate atomtronic circuits with CMPS. Okay, so the introduction. So the whole business with CMPS started in 2010 by a paper from Frank Verstraete and Ignacio Sirac, where they introduced like a variational class of states based on the matrix product state, so DMRG, which allows to simulate field theories directly in the continuum without any need to discretize the system. It was also shown in the same year that this also works for relativistic theories. And in the same year, there was also a different construction of CMPS by a holographic principle, which I will also explain you shortly. So this was in 2010. So what happened after 2010? So there's a dummy plot here. In 2011, there was complete silence. So people didn't understand anything, or I don't know, couldn't care less. But since then, it's actually monotonically increasing. And I think I forgot maybe one or two papers. So it's there is some interest in CMPS. And you can maybe identify some research branches. So the what we and Frank's group are doing are actually more numerical simulations. So we looked at excitations with CMPS. Then we have had this paper about the quantum Gospodarevsky equation, which I will explain more later. Then there is a paper by from this year actually from Wohlleich about a system with multiple fermions, and now also from the PI from Julian and Martin Giffrey. A paper about systems with long range interactions. And then there's also another branch, so to say, where lots of people in this ISOTS group are working on, namely this tomography, quantum tomography approach. And then also this.
What was this
quantum
tomography?
Well, they use CMPS to it's like the other way around than simulations. Now you have some, so it's tomography. You have some data from the experiment, and with this data you want to construct some rational state, more or less. That's how I understand it. And they can actually, they found some, so this is some procedure, given the data, that they can construct a CMPS, which gives you the vector, which is the ground state corresponding to these observations, more or less. And then these quantum simulations are using the cavity QED, using cavity QEDs, indeed. Okay, so what is a CMPS? So CMPS for open boundary conditions is defined with this state. So let me explain you this. You have here this VL and VR, these are just the boundary vectors. Then you have this exponential here in front of you, the path ordering operator. So that's such that the argument of this exponential gets ordered, so for increasingly from left to right. And then the most important stuff is these Q and R matrices. These are your variational matrices. And then you have some field operators, and they act on the vacuum. Yeah. So this whole thing over here is it's just a coefficient. No? So you have some vector on the left and some vector on the right, and in between some matrix. So you have like a superposition of many particles, and the coefficients are given by this Q and R matrix. No? And you can look at that fermions or bosons or combinations of thereof. And for periodic boundary conditions, you instead of boundary vectors, you have a trace and some boundary matrix B here. Okay. So where does this state come from? So for MPS, you can construct an MPS via sequential Smith decompositions of your wave function, or you have like this valence bond solid picture to construct an MPS. But both approaches actually doesn't make sense for in the continuum for CMPS. But there are two other ways to construct this state, and one is based on a sequential generation process. Well, it's based on continuous measurements, and you can construct CMPS via a sequential generation process. Okay, I will just explain this how this works. And the other approach is to just define the CMPS as a continuum limit of a special subclass of MPS. Okay, so in the first case. You can actually look at the CMPS as being the output field of a cavity. Okay, so look at the, imagine you have a cavity and some atoms sitting in there with d levels. Okay, And photons leaking out of this cavity. So this whole this is the process of well, this whole system is so the photons leaking out of this cavity are described by this Hamiltonian. So you have this K matrix or K Hamiltonian, the Hamiltonian for the atom inside the cavity, and then the this operator just describes the interaction between the atom and the field modes leaving out the cavity. Okay, and what you do so this Hamiltonian just describes the interaction between these light modes and the atom in the cavity. And now if you start with with the vacuum outside of the cavity and the atom is in some state VR, and then you evolve the state up to some time L with this Hamiltonian, and then you decouple it again by projecting the atom on the on a vector VL, you can actually by some computation bring this in this form here, where you also interpreted space as time. And then you can actually see again, well, so I have here some matrix simply, K, and this sum of R dagger R, tensor 1. And then here again, some R tensor psi dagger. And this is actually precisely the same form as the CMPS over there. So you can just interpret it, or you can always bring this Q, you can only make a gauge transformation such as this Q as this form. No? So you really see that actually this this output field here is is described by CMPS, and that's what you can call a holographic principle, holographic because because this is has one spatial dimension, and is actually mapped onto a system in with zero spatial dimension but just one time dimension. So you map so a 1+1 dimensional system to a 0+1 dimensional system, and that's also the base the underlying principle. Or the connection which people use with these quantum simulations. So they really like they have this QEDs, this cavity QEDs in the lab, and then actually by just using this as a black box and doing some optimization with inside the cavity, they can actually simulate quantum field theories by precisely this CMPS connection. Okay. Sorry, this is probably done here. And the other approach to construct the CMPS is just by considering it a special subclass of MPS and taking the continuum limit thereof. So an MPS, just a brief introduction, is just you have a lattice, and in each lattice you have a tensor A with three indices, and then the wave function is then so the coefficients are just the product of this matrices of these tensors, and the CMPS is then constructed by a special choice of these matrices, namely the first one has to be 1+ εq, and then the others are simply given by this guy here, and you can so just by making an expansion of this exponential here, you can actually convince yourself that indeed that in the continuum limit. This MPS with these special matrices this corresponds to the CMPS. And since therefore also says CMPS is nothing else than some special MPS, it also has like same properties and, for example, a clustering of correlation functions. You also have a gap in the system and exponential decaying correlation functions with CMPS. Okay, so then so you have now a rational class, but you need some algorithm. Some rational algorithm to simulate physical systems, and so what we use for CMPS, or actually also the only like really like powerful algorithm, is that there's a time-dependent variational principle, and you can so this is actually a very old variational principle, dates back to the 20s of the last century from Dirac and Frenkel, and it's just in principle so that TDVP approximates the time evolution. By restricting the allowed state to some certain variational manifold, okay, and you can derive these TDV, or the TDVP equations that are nothing else than the Euler Lagrange equations corresponding to this action, okay. So you can you don't have to apply this time dependent. So time dependent variation principle has nothing to do with CMPS or MPS or whatever. It's just a principle, and you can use whatever variational class you want. So you have some variational ansatz state, okay, indeed. But there's also a geometric interpretation to this, and it's simply that you define some variational class, and this defines a manifold, and the evolved state gets always after every time so projected back onto this manifold, and you try to find so the optimal tangent vector which minimizes the distance to this evolved status. Indeed, so first the two emphases was first implied, applied by U to Argemann and Frank Lestrade, and then also to CMPS, by U to and Frank and myself and others. Indeed, so but so to derive this this TDVP equation, the very central object is always this tangent vector. So you need to define, so the state get evolved, and then it always gets projected down to the tangent plane. So you need to define what is this tangent plane, and what are the tangent states spanning this plane. And the tangent states are nothing else than just the time derivative of a CMPS. Okay, so a CMPS is this guy. And now if I take a time derivative of this, I actually get the state of this form. So you just you have this integral from 0 to L, and at position x, you get you have some new matrices V and W, and they actually correspond to, so V corresponds to Q dot, and W corresponds to R dot. Yeah. And then, so the TDVP so the amounts now to find the optimal tangent vector, V star and W star, such that this is really the left-hand side of this equation, you know, such that really V dot is Q dot, and V is Q dot and W is R dot, okay? And the general procedure to find this this tangent vector is by minimizing simply always the distance between the evolved state and the tangent plane, no? So by having this this cost function and you minimize this over all tangent states. Okay, and what you then get is just in a Hamiltonian, in general form, you get these equations where the so this matrix G is so the so-called Gram matrix, and it's just defined by the overlap of two tangent vectors. And then this U1, U2 is also the gradient defined by this guy. Okay, so you need to always to get your TDVP equations to compute this the overlap of tangent vectors and this gradient, and then you reshape everything to get this G matrix and this gradient. Now, for open boundary conditions, actually, it turns out that that you can always explore your gauge degrees of freedom and make this Gram matrix to the identity. But this is not true anymore for periodic boundary conditions, which make it actually much harder than open boundary conditions. Okay. So let me show you. Let me give you an example of these TDVP equations for the case of the Liebe-Linning Hamiltonian with open boundary conditions. So Liebe-Linning Hamiltonian is like the benchmark, it's a non-relativistic benchmark model for 1D quantum field theories. So you have some kinetic term, some delta interaction here, and then some possible external potential in V of X. Okay, and now, so don't be frightened. This is more or less like a joke, the equation which I will show you now, because they're extremely horrible, but I will explain you why I show you this, and they will also become extremely get simplified a lot in one or two steps. But I just want to point you to the important things, and these are the following. So you see, you have here an R dot, which is just the time derivative of R, and there's nowhere else a time derivative. So it's first. So these are PDEs, first order in time, and then if this this curly D is like a covariant derivative, which has just so it acts on a matrix R by taking the derivative and plugging it in into some commutator with Q. So you see you have a D squared of this guy. So it's second order in space. So it's actually it's a PDE second order in space, a parabolic PDE second order in space, first order in time. And then these density matrices have also defined via somewhere two normal ODEs. Name those two, and indeed, so it's actually if you plug in the solution of these density matrices in there, you see actually that it's actually an integral PDE, because you also have integrals from these guys which you have to plug in there. Okay, so this is extremely complicated. You think why I'm showing you this? It's just a mess. But now, so what happens for the case of quantum dimension one? So if you just have a mean field ansatz. In this case, this R matrix becomes just a scalar function, a complex function of X and T. Okay, so what happens? So first thing, of course, for one dimension one, these density matrices just disappear. They're just the numbers, really scalar one. And then, of course, this also the commutator here, the covariant derivative just becomes a normal derivative. Then this Q, so the Q matrix in the case of D equals one is actually just a global phase, which you can absorb in the boundary vector. So you can also forget about this equation. And then, then you see that in the second line here, they are also just commutators, two commutators, and they also vanish in the for scalar function. Well, also this this commit is also vanishes. Then also this. So the only thing which remains is the very first line. And so if you plug this phi instead of r, then you see, well, actually you get the Gauss-Piderewski equation out of this. Okay. So this is quite a nice thing. You just you have the CDVP equation for the Liebling Hamiltonian for CMPS, and you see that for one dimension one, they reduce to the Gauss-Piderewski equation. That's why we call them quantum Gauss-Piderewski equation. Indeed, and now so it's for the amount to solve this equation, and this is pretty hard. For one obvious reason, for example, is that you see that you have inverses here of the density matrices. Yes? Okay, just keep this in mind. And typically you're interested in a system with hard boundaries. So you have a finite system and some potential, but always like in some box or so. So you have some hard boundaries, and therefore your density matrices become rank efficient at the boundaries and you cannot invert them. Therefore so far up to date, there's no perfect, so there's a perfectly well-suited numerical integrator for these equations. So there is, from last year, Yuto also wrote a paper to these uniform time evolutions, which actually is essentially a numerical integrator for these TDVP equations for MPS, also an inverse-free integrator. So in this new approach for TDVP for MPS, you don't have to take any inverses more of the density matrices, but this has not been worked out for CMPS yet. So it's we have some approaches and some thoughts about it, but it's not completely done yet. But for some special cases, this nevertheless works. For example, when you look at some Gaussian potential, but embedded in a thermodynamic limit. Okay, so you just take you have this external function, some chemical potential mu, and then some Gaussian pump, and you just take as the boundary conditions for your density matrices. You just take the solutions of the thermodynamic limit corresponding to this chemical potential. So you have to take really large system sizes, but you can really see that there's difference to the mean field Gauss-Piderewski solution. I mean, you get all this oscillation here in the density profile, and you don't get anything. So this is these are two plots for the same parameters. It's a really lot of quantum physics going on in this already at the one dimension d equals to 8. Sorry? Gamma is, that's the interaction. That's C divided by rho. It's just the interaction. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Okay. That was for open boundary conditions. So, but what I want to do is to use the TDVP equations for periodic boundary conditions and simulate these atomtronic systems. So what's the difference between MPS with open boundary conditions and periodic boundary conditions? So if you look at just some general overlap or expectation value of some operator O with some MPS, then you can actually realize that. So to do the fact simply that you are left, the very left and the very right. Tensor is just this, they are not matrices but just vectors. You can actually just write them in some local way with left and right density matrices. So you can construct everything to the left of the operator as the left density matrix and everything to the right as the right density matrix. Now for systems open with periodic boundary conditions, this doesn't work anymore because the very left guy and the very right guy is connected again. Okay, and therefore you have to compute this whole environment, a whole chunk of transfer matrices. Okay, so I'm considering here actually just uniform for just a simple case. Okay, but nevertheless, so indeed, so you see that this environment consists is like a product of always the same tensor, so to say, and namely just a product of transfer matrices of these guys here. Okay, and of course, so you can just make a spectral decomposition of these guys. This is a d squared dimensional matrix with some eigenvalues lambdas and some right and left eigenvectors. And the point is that they can always, well, you can always rescale them such that the spectral radius of this transfer matrix is one. Okay, so all eigenvalues are equal or smaller than one. And you can just then use this fact or explore this fact that you see that this environment is just actually, n copies of this transfer matrix, so you get the power to the n of this eigenvalue, and then you can just make an approximation. You say, well, okay, they are suppressed for some number n, and you just calculate the leading m eigenvalues, and then you can actually make this again of order, so this order m times d cube. Okay, so that's the intuition behind the periodic boundary conditions and open boundary conditions. But the way this cutoff procedure, so in this transformatic works in the case of TDVP is a little bit different. And I just want to show you the easiest or the most simplest calculation which you have to do to derive the TDVP equation. And with this calculation, we should show you how this cutoff procedure works. Okay, so the easiest thing you have to compute in to construct the TDVP equations is at some point the overlap between the tangent state and your CM pairs. Okay, so because the reason for this is because you always want that the tangent states you're looking for are orthogonal to the ground that you are at a given point in time, and you have to ensure that your TDVP that you're always orthogonal to this. To the state where I are at the moment. Okay, so this, without actually, I cannot really explain you how these CMPS computations work out in detail, but just believe me that this overlap is given by this expression. And the important thing is that you have some matrix here in the middle and some boundary matrix, and in between you have transfer matrices. Okay, these are e to the xt and e to the l minus xt. And these are simply the CMPS transfer matrices. They are generated by this matrix T, which has some special form. And again, also as for the MPS, in the CMPS case, the spectral radius of this transfer matrix is again one. Or in other words, the spectrum of T, so to say, consists of eigenvalues where the has one eigenvalue zero and all the eigenvalues have negative real part. Such that you can order them in a decreasing way, okay. And now you can actually just plug in a spectral decomposition of this transfer matrix in this expression here, and just compute this integral. So it's a uniform system. So you can you just plug in the spectral decomposition and compute this integral, and that's what you get. So you have to make a distinction of cases when you have two transfer matrices, right? So and the first guy is the angle is lambda I, and the second guy is eigenvalue is lambda k. Okay, so you get this term where the eigenvalues are not equal to each other, and then you have some guy when they are equal to each other, and then you see you have these sums that go from 1 to d squared. So again, this is a d cube. This cost d to the 5 is the cost of evaluating actually this. But now again, we want to make like a cutoff in the transfer matrix. Namely, we know that they are all that for some systems you have a finite system of length L, and at some point e to the lambda I for some I e to the lambda I L will be just smaller than some predefined tolerance, okay, and you can just set this to zero, yeah, and but you have to be a little bit so okay. And then if you do this, so you make a cutoff at lambda m with m smaller than d squared. Okay, and if you do this, you have to be a bit careful. So you cannot just say, well, I can just calculate in the at the very beginning just the first m eigenvalues, but you really have to compute this integral, and then look at these guys, and then what you actually get is you get and it also explains. And I assume that lambda k is larger than m, okay, such that e to the lambda k l is zero. But then, of course, you have also in this denominator you have also lambda k's, which contribute to this whole factor. But they can be also larger than m, okay. So you just have if you have three terms, once when this index I is smaller than m and index k is larger than m, then the other way around, and then when they are both smaller than m, okay. So and this still looks like that you actually have to compute all the d squared eigenvalues, because in this case here the index k goes from m to d squared, and here index I goes from m to d squared. But that's actually not true, because you can compactify this by introducing the pseudo inverse of this guy here, okay. So you can realize this that you can write these expressions. Indeed, we just with the pseudo inverse of this guy, and to compute this guy, you only need the first m eigenvalues and eigenvectors, and then you have this the transfer matrix T here. Okay, but the point is, you know that T how T acts on a vector, And therefore, you can invert, you can treat this guy in a sparse way with the cost of d cubed by only calculating the leading m eigenvalues. Okay, so that's a pretty technical part, these last two slides, but that's how this procedure works out in procedures with periodic bounding conditions. Okay, so then just again as a benchmark on the ring, the Liebling Hamiltonian, and you see that this works actually very nicely. So it's just for some one dimension 10, system size 140 particles, the blue is beta ansatz, and then the squared is circles are the CMPS solutions. And this works. So a little bit too large is energies because the bond dimension is not very big yet. Okay, so then I come, I'm a bit fast actually, to the part where I want to apply this this algorithm for periodic bounding conditions. And what we're interested in are these systems, these atomtronic systems, okay? And an atomtronic system consists typically of like a Bose-Einstein condensate loaded into a rotating ring, where at one point you have some impurity. Okay, so you can think of this at the atomic counterpart of superconducting quantum interference devices. Okay, so there is indeed. So for the atomtronic system, it's just in the BSC loaded into a ring, where at one point you have some, or at two points you have some barrier, and so the electronic counterpart is then like a superconducting ring with some Josephine junctions. So here we would actually need two barriers, no? But you can also have these S-grid systems where you only have one Josephine junction. And there are many experiments I just mentioned here too, where they observe very interesting phenomena, like memory effects, hysteresis effects in these systems, and they really just try to build atomic counterparts to electronic devices, and try to use them. Also do, of course, use them as a qubit, and do quantum computation on them with them. But yeah, that's what we want to do. And so and another aspect of this is also that so the Hamiltonian of these systems, it looks actually formally equivalent. Besides the fact that that on the right hand side you have electrons, on the left hand side you have you have bosons, but actually that's equivalent simply between the rotating Bose gas and electrons in a magnetic field. So the Hamiltonian actually looks the same, and they also get similar physical effects. So you can also just study. So they also use this as a quantum simulator, these atomtronic systems, to study actually these electronic devices, because they have in the experiment some more control on these ultra-cold gases, and use this as a quantum simulator. Okay, and so the standard numerical approach for this is to discretize this Hamiltonian and with some so-called Peier substitution and run the MRG on this. Okay, so indeed, so you had this. So this whole thing is rotating by some flux or by some angular velocity omega, and the way you write this is by this minimal coupling term to the kinetic energies, and then you have this barrier term here, u, just at one position, with a strange u, and just again a contact interaction. Okay, so to simulate this with CMPS, you need to write this in second quantization. And in second quantization, this looks like this. So you just have, again, Liebling-Linear terms, interaction, chemical potential, and this barrier term, and this current operator term, so to say. And you also have to specify boundary conditions, and you just specify periodic boundary conditions, psi of 0, psi of n. Now, the main feature of this system is that the energy as a function, the ground state energy as a function of omega, is periodic in omega. Okay, so it's actually not completely obvious why this is the case, and I will try to explain you this now. So it turns out that the ground state energy E zero of H is periodic in omega. And how you can see this is by first putting it on a lattice, yes, and once you're on the lattice, you make some canonical transformation to your equation initially operators. And then you take again the continuum limit and map it back to the continuum. So what you get is then you have transformed in this the Hamiltonian above to this Hamiltonian down here, where you just have like the Lieb-linear terms. So this coupling of the angular velocity to kinetic energy has disappeared. So you just have normal kinetic energy, interaction, chemical potential, and barrier. But you have this boundary term here, okay, with a 1 over epsilon, okay, and epsilon is there, so this is the lattice spacing. And now in the continuum, well, this diverges, and to circumvent these divergences, you have to make this guy zero. Or in other words, you have to obey the so-called twisted boundary conditions. Namely, the psi of zero is given by is e to the 2 pi omega, so it's some phase times psi of L. Okay, and now it becomes clear why the bounded energy will be periodic. Because in this Hamiltonian, there's no omega anymore, no? So the omega dependence only enters via the boundary conditions. And this is now clearly periodic in omega with period one. Okay, so for any interaction energy or barrier strength, the grounded energy will always be periodic with period one. Is this clear? I don't know. Okay. And now we have actually three Hamiltonians, equivalent Hamiltonians, as a choice to simulate. The first one is just the one we talked about before with periodic boundary conditions. And then the second one is the guy with the twisted boundary conditions. And then the third one is just making so there's a cutoff, a physical cutoff in your like a length cutoff, introducing a small length scale, and having actually periodic boundary conditions, but still leaving this or including this boundary term to your simulations. Okay, and so this is in the end the ansatz to simulate one of these Hamiltonians is then just a uniform CMPS ansatz, but where we also include this boundary matrix to the variational space. Okay, so this boundary matrix just takes care of the fact that you have this impurity at one point. Okay, and now it just turned out that actually, so by first I tried to simulate the Hamiltonian above. But it turned out it actually couldn't reproduce the periodicity of this constant energy in omega. And on top of that, you also have to, always have virtual analogies of the physical boundary conditions on the virtual level. So this means that for periodic boundary conditions, psi of zero, psi of L, your B and R matrices actually have to commute. This is simply a condition that your wave function is continuous at position zero, so that you have a well-defined kinetic energy. And this just brings this brings lots of difficulties, just numerical difficulties for algorithm actually to encode this, that you always work with matrices B and R, which fulfill these boundary conditions. So the same is also true for the twisted boundary conditions. It's actually even worse, but to work with B and R's, which always fulfill, parameterize B and R in such a way that they always fulfill these boundary conditions. There are also a lot of numerical instabilities, but at least the grounded energy was always by construction periodic in omega. Because again, when I was just simulating this Hamiltonian with no dependence on omega, but only the dependence on omega was only entering by this boundary condition. But this also didn't really work well. So what we are doing now is to simulate actually this Hamiltonian, and this works pretty well. So we just weaken these conditions by not completely fulfilling this periodic or twisted boundary conditions, but just have indeed a competition between minimizing the energy of this guy and fulfilling the boundary conditions. So you say, yes. So there are no conditions then on R and B anymore, and the algorithm is actually pretty well defined and works pretty well. Okay, so what you're interested in the end is these persistent currents. So on this ring, you always you have simply this phenomena that you have currents which do not decay. Okay. And they're defined via simply, so you have the E of energy, E of omega, and just by the derivative of E of omega. So you just need to, you need to compute this curves E of omega, and then to get this current. And what you see is that in the case of no barrier, you actually don't as soon as you have a barrier, you open up a gap at this point here, so at this return point at 0.5, okay, and if you don't have a barrier, then the current is actually a perfect sawtooth, but it gets smeared out as soon as you have a barrier, and this is a really non-trivial effect, and that's what we need. What they studied, so Cominotte and Matteo in these papers, is to compute the amplitude of this current, which is just defined by this alpha here. So it's just defined by the distance between the minimum and the maximum of this current. And they plotted this this amplitude for different gammas. Again, this is again the interaction strength. Okay, and for different lambda is just U, it's just the barrier strength. And they found actually that there is at some intermediate interaction strength, there is you get optimal resistance currents, you get currents with maximum, with highest amplitude. And the goal was actually also to reproduce this curve now for CMPS, but unfortunately I cannot show you these plots because I don't have them yet. But it's always a work in progress. And but what we do get is this non-trivial behavior of the ground state energy for different values of the barrier strength. And but first of all, first thing you need to check is what happens actually. So we have now this cutoff 1/ε. So how does the what happens to this boundary, the expectation value of the boundary term for 1/ε? And this really nicely decays. So for at some small n of epsilon, this just nicely decays. And again, and also the what you look at is just the energy of the first guy without the boundary term. That's the energy which you're interested in. And this also for a very small epsilon, there's what you do is you expand this boundary term also to first order in epsilon. Which means that for very large epsilon, you get some random wrong stuff. But then, as soon as epsilon becomes smaller and smaller, it actually also converges to some value. So this actually behaves nicely. But also you can also understand why is actually the energy converging from below, and it's simply that the larger or the smaller this epsilon, the more you obey these boundary conditions again, and the smaller is actually your variational space, because you restrict the field operators you work with. So you simply restrict your variational space, and therefore actually the ground state energy becomes higher. So you can understand this in this way. Okay, and then finally, so the how does the energy now depends on the energy of our energy differences for different values of omega. And for two different values of the barrier strength, here for U equals 0 and here for U equals 19. And you can see, well, for bond dimension 10, these blue circles are CMPS solutions, and it's actually still a bit off. So we need actually still to go to higher bond dimension. But the important stuff is to get really this, this dependence on. So the most important stuff is that you get the behavior around 0.5 of the energy curve correct, okay? And this is something which we produce really nicely. So for zero barrier strength, it just goes like quadratic. But here now, as soon as you open a gap, as you have a non-zero barrier, you need to get this. It goes need to go down again now, and this is something which we get very nicely. And therefore, I'm very optimistic that we actually in the end can also produce this plots here. And there are also several advantages from this CMPS approach compared to just DMRG or any other thing you would run on a discretized Hamiltonian. First thing, of course, you don't have a discretization error because also like the discretized Hamiltonian of your continuum Hamiltonian is actually a low density approximation. You can play around with then making your lattice spacing small and so on, but it's still something there's still an error which you have to control. But then also from a practical point of view is that so we don't have any restrictions on the density. We can actually work with any particle numbers or any system sizes. But for DMRG, you always run it. These are bosons. So for high densities, you have a very high local occupation number, and this becomes extremely costly. So Matteo actually, in this paper, they only looked at densities of 0.15 or so very small densities, very few particles. And this is something which has no restriction whatsoever for CMPS. And in other words, we can also, for example, look at attractive barriers, which also means that it's in the middle you have some high density. And this is also something which I cannot do with DMRG. So I was a bit too fast. But there's lots of fun work to do in the future. The attractive barrier, you can do local quenches with this. Let's see how this persistent currents decay if we quench the barrier strength. Or you can would also be interested to to try to simulate these memory factors which they observed in experiments. So their observed actually hysteresis by changing this frequency. So going into the parameter space of this frequency, they made a loop, and then they observed actually hysteresis effect in these systems. And indeed, so there's indeed, and that's actually it.
So those results you have there, that's just you should see if you can find the ground state of your atomic point system.
Right? So,
sorry. That those results you presented at the end, that was using CMPS to find the ground state of the Hamiltonian.
Indeed, but these are not my results. This is from Matteo's paper. No, that's also, I don't see what we want to compute in the end, but. But this is CMPS stuff.
So what you want to do is use the periodic boundary condition time calibration principle to sequence the resources or to study the systems.
Indeed, just to study the systems, and indeed it's actually lots of rich physics in the system. Indeed, for example, it's the hysteresis effect. So and the periodic boundary condition DDVP for these systems. Which seems to be the natural approach. You don't need to discretize. And but for this, I had to develop this. The periodic boundary conditions, it's pretty evolving actually to implement this, and also this cutoff procedure. So I had actually in the end to develop this periodic boundary conditions algorithm for TDVP and then apply it to these systems.
I'm trying to understand the answer that you're using. Whether you have a way of checking that it's a correct answer, or of course, my only question is about the boundary conditions that you have. So for the bulk, it's understood that this has been shown to be the tangents. But you have three proposals, 300 Hamiltonians, and two of them have to be part.
Yes.
These are three representations of the same Hamiltonian.
Yes.
And so for the third one, you didn't have to give up. Because, I mean, what's the main difference?
It's just a numerical difference. So the main what you run into problems is by having this. It's just some technical numerical reasons. If you work with B and R, so you have to find some parameterization for B and R such that this is always fulfilled.
Yeah.
And there's this Gram matrix, this environment matrix, which you have to invert. And as soon as you work with some special parameterization, this matrix is completely ill-conditioned.
This eliminates option one and option two, maybe option three.
Indeed.
But how do you know that option three is a good answer? So you have shown ground state energies you've compared to exact solutions.
Indeed. No, yeah, for example, also the dependence on, I mean, this how is this the energy converging for if you take epsilon smaller and smaller, and this is the case, or what's happening to the boundary terms, they're also like decaying for smaller epsilon.
Yes, but how do you conclude from here that you're getting a reasonable answer for the ground state?
You can just look at the energies if they converge. If they're at some epsilon, if the energies do not change anymore, then...
That shows that within your variational class, you cannot get better.
Yes.
But do you have a comparison with exact solutions?
No, this is not integrable. As soon as you have a barrier, it's not integrable. Well, for this case.
Okay.
If you don't have a barrier.
So what is this? In the absence of a barrier.
In the absence of a barrier, it's exactly solvable. So therefore, that's an exact solution, the red, and the blues are our CMPS stuff, which is still a bit off. Indeed. So you can only check it in the case of no barrier.
Okay.
But there, you have this boundary term, so it's, yes.
So in that case, you have, from the perspective of the ansatz, the fact that there is no barrier is not too important.
Yes.
You think that if the ansatz works in the absence of a barrier, then it should also...
I mean, in the absence of a barrier, you would not, in the absence...
We trust matrix solid states because we have evidence that they work well in many situations. We trust the CMPS because there is growing evidence that it's a good ansatz as well. But here you are adding extra constraints to the ansatz. You are making a transition invariant.
Yes.
In terms of Q and R that don't depend on position.
Yes.
And then you're assuming that by putting some matrix B at the boundary, that that's going to be good answers for the ground state that you're trying to.
That's the assumption.
And what I'm asking is, do you have a way to convince yourself or convince us that this is a good answer?
Not more than the plots I showed you, actually. So it's
okay, so, but you have convergence with respect to one dimension?
Yes.
Convergence of the energy.
Yeah.
But that would happen if your answer was not so good also.
That's true.
So
the only intuition that this barrier is really just it's a delta barrier located at one point. And for this, it should actually be enough to have also at one point additional.
So we have previous evidence that that's true.
Actually in the very first paper, this relativistic paper with CMPS, they studied the Casimir effect.
Okay.
And they actually did the same there.
Okay. So that's what I'm asking.
So
you have reasons to believe that that's a good answer.
Yeah, they also studied, I think, with MPS. I mean, you can, of course, do this also for MPS. Just boundary matrix as a variation matrix. And but I cannot imagine any paper. But for the CMPS, indeed, they looked at the Casimir effect, and they actually did the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. More questions? Thank you, Alan, again.